The 24th Problem by Janiah Riley. Read by Sam Gabriel. Based on the works of Andrew Hussey. Chapter 8. Honora Mater.
2019. Common Earth Era. Metro North Rail System. Hudson River Line.
Tap, 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 tap. A beat. A singular pause long enough for a breath, then tap, 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 tap. Another beat. Another singular pause. John watched Rose as she kept rhythmically tapping the side of her foot against the train cabin's wall. It didn't seem like she was aware of what she was doing. Even still, she was nervous. Nerves built up by, as far as John knew, a long-standing animosity bolstered by years of negative reinforcement. Tap, 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 tap. The train they were on, one of the Metro North's newer ones, sped up along the Hudson River, stopping at various points along the way. Outside, the river glinted in the morning sunlight, a light with a thousand sparkling jewels. John had always fancied themselves as something of a morning person, although the events of last night had him wishing that maybe he was still in bed, or maybe that this was all a dream. Rose had their copy of the old disc, taken from the strangely empty office building in Brooklyn, and she was lightly tapping it on her leg in time with the beat of her foot, tap, tap, as she stared down at it, maybe trying to make sense of it all, tap, tap. John had never really been privy to knowing much about either Rose or Dave's relationship with their mother, beyond the very barest of basics. She's a bitch. Beyond that, there's nothing to say. So this sudden bout of anxiety from a woman who made a whole production of being the most collected person in any room was more than a little bit unnerving. Here they were, all sitting together on a train that was speeding up towards the unknown, and the only one who knew the full scope of things was looking like she was about to have a panic attack. "Hey, sis, you good with this?" Dave was sitting next to Rose and turned to look at her as he spoke. "Ain't exactly a nothing thing we're doing here. And you're the one she's the most, He paused and frowned. "Was gonna say attached to, but that's not quite right, is it?" "As she has taken great pains to explain to me, I was, by the span of a year, technically the older sibling. This granted me a certain favored status." And there was a heavy bitterness behind those words. Dave shook his head at her.
"Yeah, didn't exactly seem favored to me, more like cursed. Maybe she didn't ship you down to Texas to grow up with the Navy SEAL meme IRL, but she wasn't exactly a great influence."
Tap, tap again. Rose's face twisted, then set back to the poor attempt at impassive that she had been going for during the train ride. "I'm just worried about this," she said, lifting the disc up. "The idea that I went into a fugue state and found something from my childhood in an abandoned office building."
"Yeah, man, that's weird as fuck, not gonna lie, but it's probably just some program they used back in the 90s or some shit."
"Like a shower disc," Jade chimed in.
She leaned forward towards Rose from across the space between the set of seats.
"It's probably nothing. And this way you'll get a chance to see your mom."
"Not a desirable outcome for either of us, I think. I'd rather she just continue to quietly pay my bills out of guilt."
That was enough to lapse the conversation back into awkward silence. John went back to looking out the window, staring at the river as it loped by in the distance, just beyond the boundaries of the railroad tracks. Tap, 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 tap. When the train pulled up to the station, they found that a black Mercedes was already waiting for them, along with two employees of the Lalande Matriarch. Dave made some comments about men in black that were summarily ignored, and they made the drive from the station over to where the elder Lalande actually lived. The whole arrangement made John uncomfortable. They knew that Dr. Lalande, that was it, that was what he felt comfortable calling her, had resources. But seeing a pair of employees, was that a gun one of them was wearing on their belt, come to pick them up was starting to feel weird. The car's seats were richly padded and clad in fragrant leather. Rose let them all know that the color was called a saddlebag, a ruddy brown that looked like something from an expensive purse. But it was the most uncomfortable car ride John had ever been on. The final part of the ride into Dr. Lalande's house was visually impressive, navigating up and around the hillside that overlooked the Hudson, finally doubling back and rolling in through the gates of a palatial mansion, the place palace, sat atop the hillside. An impossible feat of modern architecture that looked like it wasn't so much constructed as it had decided to perch there, looking down on the domain of mere mortals below. The idea of how much a place like this must cost boggled the mind, but here it was. Had Rose really grown up here, running around in the shadows of this colossus of wealth? Before the thoughts could come to whatever conclusion they were angling towards, the car rolled to a stop and the engine shut off. From outside, another one of Dr. Lalonde's employees opened the door. This one was a severe-looking woman wearing a suit, her hair pulled back into a tight ponytail. She didn't even bother to hide the fact that she was wearing a gun, not even a pistol, but a full-on submachine gun that hung from her shoulder on a strap. This was their welcome to Dr. Lalonde's house. "Please step out of the car. Do you have any weapons on you?" Dave got out first, grinning. "Just my AK, ma'am. Don't leave home without." But the grin faded and the good humor died on the vine. "No, ma'am, I don't have any weapons on me." The others followed suit. Only Rose wasn't asked the same question, which was an interesting piece of information, maybe not useful, but interesting all the same. Finally, the woman motioned for them to follow her with a curt, "Dr. Lalonde is expecting you," and they were on their way. Walking through the grounds gave no less of an impression than the initial drive up to the house. Everything was immaculately kept, no doubt by a staff that included landscapers and gardeners alike. The whole place seemed to be tailored to project an air of modernist minimalism, even if the mansion itself towered over grounds that certainly measured in multiple acres of prime real estate. As they walked, John saw more guards stationed around the... It was hard to think of it as a home and not some kind of facility. These guards were all visibly armed with the same kind of stubby submachine gun as their escort, all clad in suits that varied from deep blue to dark gray to flat black. Maybe not the men in black, as Dave had suggested, but the people in dark colors, at least. The path up to the house itself wound through an ornate garden filled with bushes that smelled how John imagined a 19th-century period piece would, the odor of flowering trees and wild roses and box hedges all mingling together. It was a pleasant sensation, but it had the same carefully curated feeling as everything else. This place was designed to give a very specific kind of impression, to draw the eye to certain things and, by extension, away from others. The actual entrance to the mansion was almost hidden, carefully set back from the path in a way that would be easy to miss. So that was something. The house was a dramatic set piece, but its exterior was a facade. Whatever was inside, that wasn't something that guests typically had access to. Rose's nose wrinkled as they approached, in a way that should have given away the game, but John was too struck by the grandeur and mystery of the place to pick up on it until they walked through the side door. As soon as they crossed the threshold, John knew why the entrance had been so carefully and tactfully concealed. The inside of the house absolutely reeked of alcohol. The smell of... John wasn't versed enough to know if it was wine or liquor or what, but it was enough to give the whole place a kind of alcoholic aura. That, combined with the dimmed lighting, made John think of some seedy bar more than an opulent mansion. Rose's face was showing absolute disgust now. "Oh, she's into the 83 claret again, delightful. She must be in a peculiar mood today," she said under her breath. There was no more context for this, but John wasn't sure it was necessary.
"Rose," Jade's voice had a pleading edge to it, "we don't have to do this right now. We can go back, or we could step outside for a minute."
When Rose responded, there was steel in her tone. "No, it needs to be here." No further context. Unnecessary. Rose stepped deeper into the entryway and the rest followed. As their eyes adjusted to the lighting, John could see that they'd walked into an open living room of some kind, dominated by a statue of a bearded man wearing flowing Greek robes.
"Shit, Rose, it's the wizard," Dave said.
He sounded almost as on edge as his sister.
"It's not a wizard, Dave, it's Aristotle," Rose responded.
"Yeah, you say potato, I say potato."
That comment actually got Rose to crack a smile for the first time since they'd arrived, so maybe Dave wasn't that far off the mark. The smile faded in an instant as they heard a voice from the end of the living room, clear enough to carry all the way across the room. The voice of someone who was used to saying what she wanted to and getting it without hesitation.
Rose, darling, you should have let my people pick you up from your place. The car would have been so much more comfortable than that filthy train.
John could see Rose visibly bristle at this, but she didn't respond. Instead, Dave took a step forward.
Hey, the train's pretty dope, Mom. You should try it sometime.
Of course, David, I will take that into consideration when I require transportation into the city.
Dr. Lalonde frowned from across the room, then took a moment to look over them all.
I see you've brought your friends. I assume this is Mr. Egbert and Miss Harley.
She smiled, but it felt false from across the vast cavern of the living room.
Miss Harley, I quite enjoyed your recent paper on gravitational microanomalies under particle bombardment. I assume I'll be addressing you as Dr. Harley soon enough. Your grandfather would be proud of you.
Jade looked uncomfortable, but she still smiled at the praise.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Lalonde. Did you work with my grandfather?
She shrugged.
A while ago, it's unimportant to your visit, I suspect. Rose, dear, you're being uncharacteristically inarticulate today.
That got a reaction. Maybe not a verbal one, but Rose's face burned red as she took a step towards her mother.
I need to talk to you about something. Can you come over here and tell your thug to back off?
She turned and glared at the ponytailed woman with the submachine gun, who showed no sign whatsoever that she'd even heard Rose's comment.
Very well, you.
Dr. Lalonde waved a hand at the guard.
You can go about your business. I'm sure my progeny and their friends won't pose a serious threat to my life and health.
The woman nodded and walked out of the house again without a word, back to whatever duties a heavily armed guard on a massive hilltop estate had to attend to. As the guard was retreating from the living room, Dr. Lalonde walked forward, filling into the space with a kind of energy that John found almost repellent to be around. She was wearing a pair of black pants and a simple white blouse, but it looked expensive. Her hair was done up in a bun, highlighting high cheekbones that reminded John uncomfortably of Rose.
Now, Mr. Egbert's,
John winced, and Miss Harley, please allow me to formally introduce myself. My name is Dr. Roxanne Lalonde. It's a genuine pleasure to meet you both. My daughter has spoken very highly of you. In spite of everything John had heard Rose say about her mother, this comment didn't ring false. Dr. Lalonde reached out to shake each of their hands in turn, then quickly withdrew back into herself. The friendly introduction was, after all, an act, and John could smell the alcohol in her breath even from arm's length. Rose had been very clear about what kind of woman her mother was.
I'm assuming you're here for some specific purpose, unless you and David simply wanted to come and pay a friendly visit, although I don't really have the time for much courtesy right now.
Since when do you ever? Rose responded, some of the snap back in her voice. This isn't a social call, Mother. She reached into her purse and withdrew the disc that they'd found in the abandoned office.
I need you to tell me what this is, exactly.
Dr. Lalonde reached out and took the disc in her hand, turning it over and looking closely at the logo on the front. She was trying very hard to guard her response, but John was used to the ways in which people lie to themselves and others. They could see how her face twitched ever so slightly, could see the spark of recognition.
Interesting,
she said plainly, turning the disc over again.
Where did you come across this?
Does it matter? Rose responded, guarding her own response closely. It's one of yours, isn't it? I remember playing with one like it when I was little. That caused a raised eyebrow from Dr. Lalonde.
Oh, your memory from such a precocious age is so clear, is it?
Hey, leave Rose alone,
Dave interrupted his mother midstream.
She got your share of the brain pool, didn't she?
The comment actually got a small chuckle out of Dr. Lalonde, but John could see those same defenses still up at full strength.
Of course, David, your sister is correct in a manner of speaking. It is mine in the sense that one of the companies which employs me uses these discs for their business. I ask again, where did you find it?
John could see the calculations flashing behind Rose's eyes. The decision whether or not to trust her mother enough to give her the information. Finally, he saw the result on her face, and she opened her mouth to respond. We found it in an old office building we were hanging out in. Thought it was strange that one of your discs would be there, so I believed that asking you would be the most direct path forward. A half-truth, then. John was starting to get a sense of how things had been growing up in the Lalonde household. Not a pleasant experience, to be sure.
Of course, a simple phone call or email wouldn't suffice.
No, because she wanted to look you in the eyes and see when you're lying.
Maybe I just wanted to spend some time with my dear mother, Rose said,
putting on a smile that was so obviously fake that it hurt to look at.
Is that such a bad thing?
Another raised eyebrow. Dr. Lalonde might not have done this dance in a few years, but she was falling back into it with surprising alacrity.
Of course not.
And to be able to see your brother again after so long, and to meet your two friends, too. If I weren't so busy with work, I would throw a party to celebrate the occasion.
Well, when are you ever not busy with work, Mother?
As Rose was responding, John glanced over at Jade and Dave, who looked just as uncomfortable to be there as they felt. Rose, on the other hand, looked like she was almost enjoying this, enjoying the rote familiarity of the situation, in any case.
True enough, darling, and sadly I must return to my previous task. Would you and your friends care to stay the night? I have plenty of room, and I can promise you company for dinner at least. My chef trained under Gordon Ramsay and Guy Fieri.
No, no, say no, Rose. We don't want to stay for dinner.
An eclectic combination. How could we possibly say no to such an offer?
A polite nod.
Excellent, you will not be disappointed. And if I might make another request of my daughter, may I borrow this disc for further examination? I would be happy to divulge its no doubt unassuming contents over dinner.
That got a pause out of Rose. This was feeling more and more like a game of chess as it went on, but eventually Rose nodded her assent.
Thank you, darling. Now, I really must return to my work. You and your friends are welcome to make yourselves at home here.
I assume your hired muscle will remain at a respectful distance? Rose asked, her voice low as she glanced toward the door where the guards had departed only moments before.
It seems your security has become more obtrusive since I was last here.
Dr. Lalonde smiled, a smile devoid of any warmth.
Of course, it'll be just like when you were a girl. As long as you remain within the residential portion of the estate, you may have free range. I'll have the chef prepare some lunch shortly.
No, Mother, we're quite capable of making sandwiches. None of them wanted to make sandwiches right away. What they wanted to do was be away from the stifling alcohol stench of the main house. Rose led them out of the building and over to one of the gardens, tucked off to the side. True to Dr. Lalonde's word, the guards remained distant, but not entirely absent. John got the distinct sense that trying to roam too freely would result in them being escorted back to the main house and asked not to leave again for the duration of their stay.
Your mother is...
Jade started to say something, but trailed off with a small shrug.
She's a fucking lot with a fresh fried side of bullshit, Dave said, keeping his voice down, as if Dr. Lalonde had the garden bugged.
Given what he'd seen so far, John wouldn't put it past her.
Times like these, I'm not sure if it was worse for you here or me with Mr. Military.
Rose sighed. We've had that conversation so many times, Dave. Perhaps we should focus on more relevant matters at the moment. Dave made a sure whatever gesture with his hands, but didn't move to say anything. No one did. Finally, John had had enough of the silence and decided to take matters into their own hands.
So, Rose, what the heck is going on here? You said your mom was a big-time researcher or something, but why does she have a bunch of people with machine guns walking around?
Submachine guns, technically. Mother's guards appear to favor the Heckler and Cook MP7A1 variant.
All of this was said in a way that was disturbingly matter-of-fact. As to the reason why, that eludes me at present. She has always had armed security. I believe the sensitive nature of her work lends itself to a certain level of paranoia. But this is a new development. When I was a girl, they had nothing more than the humble USP compact. I suppose her respect for German firearms has remained unchanged in any case.
Dave snorted with the laughter. Yeah, this is super fucking normal conversation we have in Rose, and that's coming from someone raised in Texas by a dude who took me to gun shows and a goddamn baby Bjorn.
Well... Rose sounded like she was picking her words carefully now. Our equally fucked up childhoods notwithstanding, there is obviously something happening. One does not simply amass armed guards for the fun of it.
So what are we supposed to do?
Jade asked, her voice shaking slightly. Just sit around and wait for dinner?
Well, I fail to see much choice in the matter. It will be the next opportunity we have to speak with Mother.
That time it was Mother, said like a title, the same as Dr. Lalonde. And I suppose there are always sandwiches.
Right.
Jade's voice trailed off.
I guess.
But Rose made no move to head back toward the house.
Actually, there is one thing I would like to do.
You are all, of course, welcome to come along. Around the back of the house, there was a garden that was less obviously for show than the rest. It was still immaculately maintained, but the trend of the decor was simpler, favoring more the box hedge and juniper bush than an array of flowers. In the center of everything, there was a clearing, a space that existed separate from everywhere else, segregated by a 3-foot-high wrought iron fence. In the center of that space, there was a small mausoleum, a kind of interpretation in miniature of the sort of granite structure that John had seen when he and his dad had gone to visit his Nana's grave a few times. It was a strange thing to see in the middle of what was ostensibly someone's backyard, but John supposed that it wasn't the strangest thing they'd seen today, probably taking a distant second to the guards with guns straight out of Call of Duty, in any case. "What is this place?" they heard themselves asking in a low voice. "This," Rose took a sharp breath, "is the one piece of evidence of my mother's humanity." She opened the small gate in the fence and led them inside. A plaque above the mausoleum had a single name on it. Jasper's.
"Your cat?"
Jade asked, her voice wavering between incredulity and amazement.
"Your cat from when you were a kid?"
Rose nodded. "I loved that little ball of fur and anger. To be fair, a good portion of the anger was probably because I tried to dress him up in baby clothes and conduct amateur psychoanalysis on him. Being raised in this environment will have that effect on a young girl." Dave scoffed. "Of course." He walked up and tapped the granite of the mausoleum. "Rip Jasper's. You were a real one."
"This is so fucking weird," John said.
They couldn't help but stare up at the plaque, wondering what it is that would possess someone, especially someone as diffident as Dr. Lalonde, to make something so ornate for a cat.
"Was this some kind of, I don't know, some kind of mind game thing? No offense, Rose, and Dave too, but you guys' mom seems like she's not the best with feelings and people and stuff."
Rose walked up and pressed her own palm against the stone. "A tactful understatement, John. But in this one specific case, I believe that she was trying to show genuine connection with her child, albeit in her own outlandish, somewhat perverse way." Dave took his hand away and stepped back from the mausoleum.
"Which is to say, weird AF, but kind of charming in her own fucked up way."
A nod from Rose, who kept her hand on the granite.
"I suppose
a woman thoroughly absorbed with her own follies, but able to muster at least 1 ounce of humanity. If only in this one case." A pause, then a smile.
"Mom's head is like a fucking saw trap. Impossible to unlock and custom-made to mess people up,"
Dave said, shaking his head.
"I stopped trying to make sense of it years ago. Fuck knows why Rose is still at it."
"Because, in spite of everything, I think there's something underneath it all, and maybe one day I'll be rewarded by seeing that again. Maybe over something more significant than a cat."
The smile was still there, but it was sadder now, more distant. A smile turned by time and distance from the source.
"R.I.P. Jasper's. You were a real one indeed."
For the text of this and other stories by the same author, visit the AO3 page of Janiah Riley. The music is Cycles, composed and produced by Sam Gabriel. Special thanks to Sakiko. If you would like me to record a story, voiceover, or character, please get in touch using the contact information on my website, which is located at samgabrielvo.com. And there you can also find other stories that I've read, my Discord server, and ways to support what I do. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.